Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome George Friedman, the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, my colleague for many decades. George has guided me with his colleagues through the unknowns of contests, geopolitical contests. And right now, there's a humdinger in and around the Black Sea, especially Ukraine. We're told that the Russian Federation has deployed 100,000, 90,000, 175,000. The numbers tumble. Troops in and around Crimea and Ukraine. The intention unclear. Over these last days, we've witnessed many exchanges of thoughts in NATO, in Europe, certainly in Washington, and also from the Russian Federation, from Vladimir Putin himself. So I asked George Friedman to understand, to help me understand what we're looking at here. If I read George's most recent posting on Ukraine, which was before the conversation between the two presidents, what we're looking at here is Vladimir Putin wants something, and he aims to achieve it without firing a shot, perhaps. George, a very good day to you. I won't characterize your analysis any more than to say it was your opinion several days past that Vladimir Putin does not want to take the risk of actually rolling those tanks and covering over territory that is now in the possession of the fragmented Ukraine. Has the conversation between the two presidents or the exchanges in Europe by a Secretary of State and foreign ministers changed your opinion? Good day to you, George.
No, he wants Ukraine. He doesn't want to pay a price for it, not a military price, because he could lose. And that's really important. What he's doing is trying to rebuild the Soviet Union. He's done that in the South Caucasus. He's done that in Central Asia. He's done that in Belarus. He's a KGB man. He wants, as a CIA guy would do, my country fell apart. I want to build it together before I die. And he wants to have Ukraine. That's the crucial thing. But he's very, very cautious. He's always been cautious. And what he's doing, I think, is testing the Americans particularly, but also seeing if he sees weakness and division among the Ukrainians. But I'd be very surprised if he would take the enormous risk of attacking.
Ukraine is fragmented. Crimea was annexed by the Russian Federation many years ago. The remaining parts of Ukraine are divided into what appear to be two or three spheres, one of them called Donbass, a rebellious group. The other is unclear to me whether it is loyal to the central government, Mr. Zelensky, or loyal to its particular interpretations of what Ukraine is. Part of it was always Poland. I've learned all this over the years reading you, George. Right now, I want to start in Ukraine. Is Ukraine united, to your understanding, as best as it can be, given the fragmentation, in opposition to Russia? Or is there a part of Ukraine that welcomes the Russian intervention?
Well, there's a part of the Ukraine that is Russian, and that's the Donbas region in the east. And these are mostly Russians who don't like the Ukrainians. Ukraine has never been an independent country, not really. It has always been a satrapy of the Soviet Union, Russia, and it's never been very comfortable with the West either. So it's a very strange place, and it's highly fragmented, but it has one element. It's huge. And even if empty, invading this huge country and pacifying it would be quite difficult. But what he wants to do is create an atmosphere in which the Ukrainians realize the United States can't be counted on.
The U.S. right now position is that Russia will pay a price, a very high price, in the event of an invasion or an intervention. There are many terms here that are being used. Right now, it occurs to me that Ukraine is under such extreme pressure with many statements of alarm, existential alarm, that the war in some fashion is already underway. However, set that aside. The U.S. has also said through several voices, Mr. Blinken and the presidents, Russia will pay a price, but that troops are not part of the story. What price is too high for Mr. Putin to take that risk, George?
Well, publicly, the U.S. has stated it's going to freeze the banking system. And if the Europeans join that, that is painful. But the American counter is going to be missiles. They're coming in with tanks in three different columns. That columns, they need petroleum, they need food, they need everything. The Americans will attack from missiles and some air power those supply dumps. And that will make it very difficult for him to proceed. We're not going to go on the ground. That's impossible. But we have a lot of tools that we can use to militarily to make this painful. And he doesn't know if we're going to use it. And frankly, I don't think Biden knows if we're going to use it. But it's there on the table.
The intervention then would be countered with military power. The president has also spoken of a sanctions power. You mentioned the banking system. However, I've read enough of contradictions here, George, so I need some clarity. By compromising Russia's access to the banking system, doesn't that also undermine the credibility of the banking system in Europe? And doesn't that also introduce the unknowns of Russian natural gas that is critical to European success?
The United States has taken a habit of handling problems with sanctions, okay? It's cheap, it's easy, it may or may not result in anything. And what Biden was saying basically is that we're going to do this at least. But he's not completely in control of it. There are countries like Poland that are going to be seeing the Ukrainian move very dangerously, and they're not without power. They have got a military. So events will go out of the hands of the president. The president will want to kind of blink and let this go by. But the forces inside of Europe, inside of Ukraine, are going to force them into it. And the problem that the Russians have is they do not want to confront the Americans. They don't want to beat the Americans. They want to deal with the Americans. So that uncertainty is hanging on the Russians. So far, the Russians have just said, you know, a lot of hot air. It's propaganda.
We're given photographs of the Russian tank park. We're told again and again that there are threats. Most recently, what we have is headlines from Europe that are surprising. This one right now, within these last hours, Ukraine blames Germany for blocking NATO weapon supply. Subhead, this is Financial Times, London. Strategy of not provoking Russia won't work, says the Ukraine defense minister, Alexei Reznikov. So while there's what you call hot air on the Russian side, there's a lot of hot air on the non-Russian side, on the European side as well. Are the Europeans looking upon this as a contest between the U.S. and Russia? Are the Europeans getting involved through NATO?
Well, NATO itself doesn't have enough force to, these countries don't have the force to do anything. But they are getting alarmed. Germany is not. Germany has a special relationship with Russia, both in terms of natural gas and in terms of wanting to create a kind of entente with Russia. Their natural equipment, natural supplies, and also German industry. So the point is that Germany is an outlier, and it's going counter to the rest of NATO. But it's much more powerful than the rest of NATO.
I want to look at the Russian side here. We're going back and forth across the line. You say that Putin wants Ukraine back in his sphere of influence without fighting for it. Is this a legacy matter for Vladimir Putin's presidency? Because he's given us the idea that he's going to extend his presidency well into the 21st century.
It's partly that, but it is the buffer. This is where Napoleon was defeated. This is where Hitler was defeated. This is the buffer between Europe and Russia that the Russians enjoy, that value. It's important to them to have it back. The problem is that they have is they're playing a psychological game, because if you're planning to invade someone, you don't telegraph it. You don't give them time to possibly take some steps. They're trying to get the area unsettled and possibly extract some concessions for not doing it. But he's been very careful not to make any moves. In fact, the fact that he's handing out pictures of the tank parks is a sign that he's not serious, because the last thing you want is the location of the tanks. So these are not the things a country would do if they're about to invade.
History says that the Russian military is very keen on deception. It would prefer to win battles without firing a shot if the enemy believes, the adversary believes, is already defeated. Is the tank park, the deployment, is that a deception for something else, George?
No, I think it is a statement that we are here and we are able to attack and you don't know if we're going to do it. So make concessions now. But at the same time, I mean, if you're going to invade Saipan, yeah, you don't let the Japanese know we're coming. So part of an invasion is surprise. That is the key element of warfare. And the Russians have given that away. And that's sort of an indication of what they're doing. At some point they may invade. This isn't it.
The Russian frontier extends more than Ukraine. Belarus, the Baltic states. That story is now in play because of what we're told is Lukashenko's idea to deploy migrants that he has brought in, whom he has brought in, as weapons across Lithuania's frontier, across Poland's frontier. We're also told that Poland is doubling the size of its military. Is the offensive that is underway in Ukraine just part of a larger offensive against NATO borders, George?
Not just NATO borders. He did the same thing in the Caucasus. Caucasus used to be part of the Soviet Union. There was a war between Azerbaijan and Armenia, and the Russians came in with peacekeeping forces, 10,000 peacekeepers. In other words, they took control of the area. Lukashenko lost the election, or won it, however you want it, and the Russians came in to guarantee his presidency. So what they've used in gaining tremendous controls, they've used soft power. They've not gone in militarily into Belarus, except some exercises. Wherever they went, it was without resistance, which would make Ukraine very different. Now, Ukraine is more important than any of them to Russia, so they may, but also they only have about 50,000 to 100,000 people. Well, half of those are not combat soldiers. They are support personnel, okay? So he's not going in with the infantry. The tanks, this is World War II model that he's got in war. This is not how war is fought now. So he's giving a symbol of war. What he's got behind the lines in terms of missiles, hypersonics, and everything else, that's another question. But this particular demonstration, I mean, remember one thing about the Russians. They have not fought a major war since 1945. And it's been a long time since their command and control people have had to go out there and run an invasion, supply everybody, and so on. So this is not an experienced army. And when we look at it during maneuvers, it's not a very good one yet. But he's going to use it to try to change the entire sensibility of what's going on.
I'm speaking with George Friedman, the chairman of Geopolitical Futures. We've been focusing on the battlefield, potential battlefield of Ukraine. The story beyond Ukraine is NATO and its viability. There's been a conversation between NATO ministers these last days. And when we come back, what shape is NATO in to listen to what we're told is a demand by Russia that NATO pledge not to incorporate Ukraine and Georgia forever? In other words, Russia wants a seat at the table to veto. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify.